Welcome to SFH Presents, the One and a Third podcast with your host, Zach Polk.
I like that too, but I do like, you know, animation titties. Oh, that everyone has someone in their life that deals with the shit that I deal with.
And featuring Tyler Southern.
You want me to rub your feet? You want me to get the bath running? Something? Can I help you relax?
Now turn that shit up.
We are not medical professionals. This is for entertainment purposes only. If you, you're suffering from something or in a situation where you need help, reach out to a medical professional, or there's helplines, or, you know, family members, a support system, whatever it is. Today we have Brandon Long with us. Brandon is Ty's neighbor. And I don't know much about Brandon, and I thought about doing a little research, but where we want to take this podcast, or how we want to do this podcast, is I want to get to know him as you're getting to know him. So, Ty, why don't you give us a little background? You know a little bit about him.
So me and Brandon met each other in the hospital. He was injured almost a year after I was, but I was there for 2.5 freaking years. And we ended up doing a lot of rehab together and working together, doing exercises and stuff and making it more fun that way. And then when I retired and built here in St. Augustine, he was either to go back to Fort Wayne, Indiana, or somewhere in North Carolina. And we convinced him that St. Augustine was where I was at. So he ended up building two doors down from me. And the rest is rock and roll history. But I wanted to start with 3-5 Dark Horse, which was the unit he was in the Marine Corps. But I wanted him to jump straight into why he ain't got no legs, if it was cool with everybody.
Hey, good evening, guys. Thanks for having me on your show. I joined the Marine Corps back in 2009, and I was blessed to be a part of 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, Dark Horse, get some. And we were out of California, and we deployed to Helmand Province in Afghanistan back in 2010. And yeah, while we were over there, I ended up stepping on an IED right before Christmas and left me in a wheelchair. And that's when Tyler and I met over at the hospital in D.C.
Wow. What happened 2 days later, he wondered quietly to himself.
Yeah, 2 days later, while I'm still in Afghanistan, my ex-wife gave birth to my daughter. And so she's been the thing that helps keep me going every day. It's nice, you know. She's never seen me with legs, so she never got to meet the person who I was before, which is kind of a blessing. You know, she gets to see this side of me.
Plus, you were... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like where the things that you have done with her throughout her life haven't been with legs, where she had to do different things with you afterward.
Yeah, she had no clue of, like, what playtime with dad was with legs. So, I mean, she knows this dad, which is kind of good.
Right. That was the joke on our street, because the third... or the second, third, and fourth house built on this 12-lot neighborhood were three broken Marines. And there was just the whole joke that we were going to rename it Legless Lane, or, daddies on this street don't got legs. Like,
I was actually curious about that. I was wondering if it was like a prerequisite for getting a lot there. You're like, I want to build a house. Like, you got limbs? You can't.
It would have been nice.
It was full separate from that. But that one dude lived here for 2 years before anyone built. And I'm from Jacksonville, Florida, originally, 30 minutes north of here, and wanted to live close enough to my family that, like, I could see them if I wanted to, and then but far enough away that they could not pop by unannounced. And then my next door neighbor, John, our other neighbor, same exact story, but Orange Park, just another part of Jacksonville. And then, it was basically what you had. No good things waiting for you in Fort Wayne, or was it the snow?
It was mostly the snow. We went home for a little over a year, but I was late to work. Car accidents all the time with the snow and everything, and being in a chair, I didn't want to deal with it anymore. So I knew I wanted to go somewhere it didn't really snow, and I ended up in Florida.
Go ahead.
I was going to say ice and snow are a freaking nightmare in both prosthetics and wheelchairs, for sure.
Well, it's a nightmare with all your limbs. So, yeah, I could only imagine.
You have so many joints to help.
Doctor's appointments.
So just to get into, you know, immediately my thoughts and to stick to the nature of this podcast, what was it like for you? Like, I know Ty's journey was a little different than most people as far as what he came after he lost his limbs and tried to get back into regular life. It was a pretty seamless process for him as far as mentally and emotionally, where for me, I mean, just trying to imagine myself in that scenario, I feel like I would have a much harder time. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the easiest. I mean, I did have people that kept me motivated, kept my spirits up, but there was times it got really tough, and the medication kind of took its toll on me mentally there for a little bit. But separating from the military and going to a civilian side of life, I don't want to say I wasn't ready, but it was something I mentally wasn't ready for. So it was definitely like a culture shock. I went down some rough paths because I didn't know exactly what to do. Didn't have many military friends around me anymore. So kind of went down some rough paths, you know, learned and lived, but.
Yeah.
And so you were 19 when you were injured?
Just turned 20.
I was going to say, yeah, you're real young like I was. And that was, yeah, a whole different part. And I had a different kind of support system that was, and they were all right where I was all the time, no matter what. I know your parents live close now, which I know has been a godsend.
Yeah, now they live over in Middleburg, about an hour away. Mm-hmm. We had been talking when I moved here. We'd talked for years about getting them down here. And finally back in, 2017, I got them down here. And it's just been a blessing to have my family a little bit closer now.
For sure.
So obviously, like when people you know, I know that generally military have a hard time often acclimating to like civilian life in general. But when you're losing your limbs and it's obviously a huge life change, you know, how did that individually like were you, did you go through stages of being pissed off or being just sad or upset that you had lost your limbs and that you now had to deal with all these things differently?
Oh yeah, absolutely. During recovery, the first year I was went between like angry and sad and angry and sad. And but luckily I was around other veterans there that were injured as well that kind of helped keep my spirits going.
Right.
But when I got out of the military and I went back home to Fort Wayne, Indiana, there were no combat vets, you know, of my age group that had been injured like me. I mean, we had combat veterans there, but none that looked like me. So when getting set up in the VA, they had to flip through a pamphlet to figure out how to do the steps for me. And there just weren't amputees. So it was a big culture shock being the only one in a wheelchair. And then it sucked. You know, you want to go drink beers at your buddy's house, but you can't because there's three flights of stairs, you know, and it's icy out or whatever. You know, so it definitely took its toll on me for a little bit between angry, depression, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of asked Ty this, but we sort of touched on this a little bit, and I've talked to, you know, several people who are in the military about this subject, and it's kind of a touchy, difficult subject for people to really approach at times. At any point, did you feel like the things that you were involved in, the reason why you were fighting in particular, maybe why you were particularly over there, did any of that ever piss you off? Did you ever feel like any of the things that you were sent to do were not worthwhile things?
There was a couple times that some of the stuff that we did, I just didn't understand why we're doing it. Why are we doing it this way? The whole time we were there, I mean, I knew we were, you know, relieving the British and trying to take over this hellacious area that's just been under constant fire and, you know, free the people there. I understood that part of the mission, but at the same time, I mean, we were getting hammered pretty bad and it's like, what the hell are we doing here? You know?
Yeah.
I had my views on it and everything. And then the way we pulled out of Afghanistan, that one hurt probably more than anything because all the work that we did do over there was just pretty much abandoned.
Yeah. I can understand that being difficult. Obviously, if you look at American history and some of the things that we've been involved in, there's a very questionable motives at times. And I understand that in the military, you do your job. You obviously want to fight for freedom. You want to do good things. And you also, most importantly, at some point, you're just taking care of each other. You're taking care of your brothers. Your brothers are taking care of you.
So that was where I was going to jump in then, because at our pay grade, he was an E3, I was an E4, down there in the lower enlisted game, real ground pound and ground pounders. It wasn't about the why. It wasn't about the political anything or, you know, who cares? Like, who cares if it's for opium or if it's for this or for that? We were working to protect him and to protect him. Like those, we had men getting hurt. We had people dying. So everything that our daily lives were about minimizing that.
Exactly. Now that we just wanted to check on each other, make sure everything we did, everyone was safe and secure, you know, and wanted to bring everybody as much as we could back.
Yeah.
So now that you guys are in the position you are in, and you're out of the military, and your lives have been forever changed for it, I can see both of your love for it, and I also. Most of my family has served in one way or another. I understand the love for your brothers, but is there any point where you think that sometime, like now, where you're sitting now, not when you were currently in, where you sit and go, man, why the fuck are we sending people over there? Why are we getting involved in this thing? Because we could all agree that there's been times that we've sent troops for stupid reasons.
When it wasn't World War I or World War II, where the entire world was fighting against an evil force and tyranny, there has been, if not a clearly defined goal in mind, or 100% shady shit can be conspiracy theoried up. But my way of thinking has always been the same. As long as we're sending people and people are getting hurt, then we need to fight to protect and bring everyone home kind of thing. It's not like that place
needs some freedom. Maybe we should go give them some freedom.
I completely understand how I can, and I'm not at all anti-military or anti-US government by any stretch. It's just one of those things as an outsider where, you know, even looking at, for example, what's going on with Palestine and Israel, It's really difficult to know who the good guy and bad guy is. I understand where our government stands, but if you really look at all the propaganda coming from both sides and the stories from both sides, it sounds horrific on both parts. So I have a hard time knowing who I would support. You know, like if we put boots on the ground for Israel, do I feel okay with that? I don't know. I don't know if we're helping the good guys. I don't know. So
honestly, I'm just on the viewpoint that we just need to stop worrying about everybody else and start worrying about ourselves at this point.
I agree, 100%. We
put so much focus around everywhere else, policing the world, and we put zero focus into what's actually going on here back at home. Our economy is trash. We got more veterans on the streets than ever before. We're taking care of illegals over our veterans, over our citizens that were born here, you know. I think we need to just stop trying to be world police and just take care of our own.
Well, and I also think that it would be fair to say that often our intentions aren't necessarily just to be police either. It's because there's some financial or political or some type of gain, some kind of motivation or motive in there that is not as sweet as it seems, you know?
Right.
And so sometimes it's that too. It's like, not only do I feel like, I mean, the whole thing in Ukraine with us being involved and all of our tax dollars going to it whenever the war started based on our actions, based on us trying to bring Ukraine into the, you know, it's all blurry. We only know what we're supposed to know. And it's
what they want us to know.
Right. And there's propaganda from every side. And I try not to take I don't want to take a stand on any side. Because I don't know enough to stand hard on anything, but it definitely feels like things are not trending in the right direction here. And I think you hit it on the head. Like, let's put some focus in that. Let's put money into fixing our own problems.
And then consider education, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, with the amount of money that we've, you know, sent through the war between Ukraine and now what we're sending to Israel, we could have given each American citizen thousands and thousands of dollars. We could have pulled every citizen out of debt. We could have put, you know, homeless in homes, but you know, we instead choose war.
Could have a better healthcare system. Could have
better.
The nonsensical shit that happened after the fires in Hawaii, how incredibly terribly we handled that. That type of thing, man. Like, there's so many things I feel like we could do a better job at, and it's just not our focus whatsoever. It's just getting our ass and everything everywhere else. I just always wondered, you know, like, I've definitely talked to enough military that I know there's people that stand on both sides of the of those issues. You know, there's people that are just like, yeah, we should go in there, and there's people that are like, nah. You know, I just feel like there's a middle of the line, and you kind of hit it. Like, let's fucking work on America.
Well, and we were fortunate enough that the wars that we were a part of, either Iraq or Afghanistan, were unpopular. They weren't popular, but they weren't Vietnam.
Right.
Like, so we didn't have the cross section hating our guts when we came home. Right. Like, due to or anyone who's going now to do anything in these things that are popping up everywhere, there are very clear we all go for these guys, we all go for these guys. So they're like, those guys coming home are going to face a lot of animosity that we never had to deal with.
Yeah.
That's one of the beautiful things after Vietnam was freaking, we were welcomed almost too hard. Like, where, you know, it's calm. It's fine. It's so okay. Please stop. It's okay. I swear.
you guys were still getting that 9/11 pussy.
Well, you know, we're trying, right?
That is not how I would have.
I mean, I would have. I don't know, man. I mean, even when you look back and hear the things that have come out after what happened in Iraq and some of the early shit, where how many lies that were put in place by our own government in order to justify going there, and like, you could go down so many rabbit holes with the shit, but what we all agree on, Democrat or Republican, is nobody trusts the government, yet we keep voting the same fucking idiots in. It's mind blowing.
Yeah, I cannot believe, you know, what all is going on. Just the absolute state of decay, in a sense, of where we're at.
Yeah. It's embarrassing, really. I mean, it's embarrassing. We're the greatest country on earth in history, probably, and we're just, they're making a mockery of the Constitution and our, and frankly, the people that do serve. Like, I've never, never at any point, even when I thought we weren't, so I didn't like something we were doing, did I ever blame the boots? I never blamed the guys carrying guns and backpacks and my dad fucking typing on a typewriter in Vietnam behind the lines or whatever the hell he did.
Boots is a derogatory term in the military.
explain that.
I got you. So historically, on wooden ships, the new guys could not go barefooted. Their feet weren't tough enough yet. So a new guy had to wear his boots so the rigging didn't destroy his feet.
Boots is like a roof.
So,
like a
boot is someone who's just hasn't had their cherry popped yet and is fucking, you know, raw.
That's funny.
The army calls them cherries. And then I don't know what the other branches do, but if you call someone a boot, that, like,
that's an insult.
This is a fight word, sir. It's not like
that's
pogue.
Funny.
Pogue is different. People who take pogue negatively are the problem. Sorry,
yeah, they're pogue the mega pogues.
Sorry, is pogue.
I'm coming. Sorry, pogue is personnel other than grunt. It literally just means everyone that is not ground forces.
Oh, okay.
And some grunts use it derogatorily, like, you know, pokes this, pokes that. But, like, it's just it's everyone else term. So, like, when I use it, it's never derogatory. But when people get bent about it, I'm like, you didn't have to sign up for whatever desk job you signed up for. Like,
yeah.
03 ground option was fucking available. I can guarantee it. The quota is not usually filled on 03 ground option.
Yeah. So once you got, you know, back in civilian life, now you have a kid, right?
Oh yeah.
So which you said was right around the same time that the injury and everything happened.
Yeah, between a day and a half and 2 days, with time change, it's right in between there. But yeah, she was born, and I listened to her cry in Afghanistan I listened to her again in Germany, and I got to hold her when I got to the States. It was pretty awesome.
Wow. How long after she was born was that when you first got to hold her?
She was 6 days old.
Yeah, I was going to say it would have been like a week.
Yeah, the hospital actually wasn't even going to let me hold her. They were saying, no, you know, we got to quarantine you, this and that. And I went off. I said, I don't care what the hell you have to do. You give me my child. I want to see her. I want to hold her. So they came in and they used these ultraviolet lights or whatever and scanned the whole room and made sure I was clean. And then I was able to see my kid.
Well, because, I mean, you see where they're coming from a little bit. They're, you know, obviously trying to protect Claire in that situation rather than, you know, deny you something. Because the dirt that got put into our system violently contained
very like, dirty dirt.
The dirtiest dirt in all the land. It was just every infection known to man came out of that crap. Plus, you got a little more earth in you than most, though, right? Like, him and Doc, Lance Price, one of the other SFH owners, were dumbfounded to find out that I had no internal anything when I was injured.
Yeah.
But that was not the case for you, correct?
Yeah, no, I, when I got injured, I ended up taking a rock a little bigger than my fist that had entered in my knee and blown all the way up into my chest, and it was found up underneath my heart and in my lungs. And yeah,
what the fuck?
That little rock just messed me up.
You still got it,
man?
No, they actually didn't give it to me. So the corpsman on the bird that picked me up, he actually pulled his knife out of his pocket and cut my stomach open to drain out some of the blood that was filling up. And in doing so, the rock fell out of the helicopter.
Oh,
what a dick. You're supposed to hold on should've to that souvenir.
I should have made him land and go get it.
That would have been your JFK coconut.
I would have cherished that damn thing, too.
Get it lacquered. Make it into a freaking trophy.
So tell the story as far as you, I guess, remember or even I mean, if you don't mind, if you're comfortable telling it, like of the day that it happened, like how did it all go down?
Yeah. That day I had finally been able to go on patrol with my squad. We had got separated due to our casualty count and just, we were opening up new observation posts. So my squad got split apart, but we got put back together for, a patrol. And that morning, I was actually going through one of my pockets on my vest that I kept, you know, miscellaneous things in. And I had a statue of St. Michael's, a little miniature one. And I pulled him out of my pocket and he was actually missing both of his legs. They had broken off. I'm like, oh, what? Well, that sucks. So I'll fix it when I get back from patrol. We go out there and I make it out to the Helmand River. And I was just in that area the day before. But this day there were stacks of rocks, about 5 rocks tall, wide enough for tractors to get through. And they were like every 10 or 15 feet, there were just another stack on each side. And so I followed that to one neighborhood, well, one village, turned around and then started following it south. And about 200 yards into this, you know, rock path, there happened to be the same concept going off to the right. But this time it was wide enough for like foot traffic. And instead of like every 15 feet, they were like every 3 or 4 feet. And they led back to a bush. And you could see that bush had been like messed with. So you could see on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. And then just behind that bush was like 50 of those stacks of rocks. So I knew there was something, but my position that day was point man. And I had to do sweeping and look out for any, you know, explosives or trash so I can call out EOD and have them come take care of it. But I went to step over the bush to get a better look at everything and see if I can't find something. And when I put my foot down, that's when the explosion went off. And I remember most of it. I remember I landed on my right side and everything was brown and dusty. And I knew like something happened. I got blown up. It hurt to breathe. My head was ringing. And so I laid onto my back and I told myself, okay, look down, see how bad it is. See if we can continue on or like what's going on. I actually went to lift my right leg to see how bad it was. And I pulled my bone out of my leg, and like the flesh flopped to the ground, and then I kind of passed out after that. And I had visions and stuff. I got during that time, like I went home and I got to hug my ex-wife. I got to hug my parents, and I got to like speak with my daughter's spirit or soul or whatever. It's, I don't even know how to really explain it. But then I came to, and my guys were working on me, trying to stop the bleeding and just get me under control. And they did an amazing job with the injuries that I sustained. I mean, I very well could have died because my right leg is so high up because of that rock that went through. My femoral artery actually retracted back into my stomach. So they had to like get up there and get it.
And, dude.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
I used to have nightmares and stuff about that experience of just like waking up again and I can't see, I can't breathe, and
skin flopping around.
Yeah. I mean, that stuff used to bug me for a couple years after I got injured. Like, I like gory stuff. I'm like gory stuff between movies and just stuff on the internet. And I couldn't do it for a couple years. Just couldn't. It was too much.
So since after that couple of years, has it, it's not as common, or it doesn't happen at all?
Yeah.
You can watch gory stuff again type thing. I mean,
yeah, I'm back at, I love watching all my gory stuff. I noticed a lot for me when I got off of the medicine that they had me on, some of my symptoms subsided as far as like PTSD and some of that. I mean, as I'm getting older, they're starting to expose themselves in other ways that I didn't think I had. But yeah, I don't really have too much as far as nightmares. I would say my biggest nightmare is the fact that I have dreams with legs. And so I wake up every time and it's like, fuck, I still don't have them. You know?
Yeah.
That's like the biggest nightmare in a sense that I deal with right now.
I can understand that. I always feel, I know, in all honesty, I've said that for years. Like, I feel like nightmares, what people call nightmares, I'm fine with because I wake up and it's not true. But it's when you have a good ass dream, something awesome in your dream, and you wake up and it's gone, it's not there, whatever.
It
totally makes sense.
One of the ones that was the worst is like I hated running. Even when I had legs, I hated it. So one of the worst was I had a dream where I was just running. There was nothing to it. I was just running out in the field. And I'm just like, this is a stupid dream. I wake up. I can't do
everywhere
that.
Everywhere I would go, I was running.
Yeah, I can't frolic in the flowers. You know, like, damn.
Damn. Yeah, that's fucked, dude. That's torturous. I mean,
good times.
I know enough, and I know you've been through some relationship things, and that's one of the reoccurring things I have is, like, from my divorce, it's been over a decade, but I still will have dreams where we're still together and the family's not broke up, and I'm like, wake up, and I'm like, fuck, dude.
Yeah. I've had some of those myself, you know, waking up still, you know, not waking up, but dreaming, and yeah, the family's still complete. You're out at like the zoo or something, and then wake up. Yeah. And you're alone again.
Yep.
Never awesome. Yeah.
So our divorce, it was a little rough, ended up pretty nasty, but I mean, taught me a lot.
It's not talking shit. Claire won't be sad if she hears this. You can say the facts of the case. Because I still want to know who your lawyer was, and I still want to know who her lawyer was, and how half of this shit even worked out, and who the hell was the judge that allowed most of this shit.
I didn't have a good lawyer.
Hit him with the stats that she got.
Well, pretty much whatever I had left in my account. So when I got injured, I was given $100,000 for my legs. You know. And pretty much whatever was left in that account was gone. I was able to buy a motorcycle out of it, so I guess I got some.
That's the crazy, ramp van, man.
Almost made it to where you had to sell the house. What does she need a ramp van for?
You got your ramp van?
No, they're trying. They tried for everything, but I was able to keep the house, keep the vehicles. So.
And your wheelchair, hopefully. That would have been wild.
Yeah. I might have had a flat tire at the end of it, but...
Step.
It's a subject I feel like... I've actually thought about having an entire podcast based on how men kind of get fucked and divorce. Happens a lot. Not always. I mean, there's obviously exceptions, but even in my situation, it was just kind of like we ended up with a 90-year-old judge who was on his last couple of cases, and he was just, she's the mom, you're the dad, she gets them, you're fucked. You pay a bunch of money.
Yeah.
It's a sad situation, man, because there's some shitty moms and there's some shitty women and there's some shitty men and some shitty dads.
Yeah, and, that's true.
It's not, the family not court has very little concern for what's really best for the kid or even necessarily who's the best parent. It's always just lean into women.
Historically speaking, I'm sure there's some that stand up for it. But yeah, for sure. You hear more for sure that it all goes in favor of not people that look like me.
Yeah, I don't even think it's necessarily that the court sets out to fuck men. The court sets out to make money. Like the family court system isn't tied to the regular court system at all. It's completely separate, and they just the things they're allowed to do or where you know lawyers that practice can become a judge, and then they can be friends with all the other lawyers who I've watched a documentary on it. It's terrifying.
Oh, and another thing that just drives me nuts is like, let's say something was to come up. I've been divorced 8 years now. If something was to come up where I needed to take her back to court, they're going to look at, okay, well, you're doing better now because you've got a little bit of a savings account because we gave it all away before. Well, because you're doing better, we're going to make sure that all of that savings you have now is going to get washed through, and then we'll get to what you want in courts once you owe us money. And I've had a couple attorneys tell me, like, unless your evidence is 100% solid, there's no point in going back now. They're just going to go for more from me or the guy or whoever it is.
Just a way to collect money and a way to keep people in the system is good for the court system. And it's unfortunate because it's not creating good situations for children, which is what should matter the most.
It's the same as
through a phase. Go ahead, Tyler.
No, I was going to say it's the same as cancer treatment. I mean, there's no one's looking for a cure because everyone's going to lose trillions of dollars.
Sorry.
Hated through the divorce. I mean, like the stuff that I was put through, like mentally, I wasn't the stablest, you know, and it's because of everything that I had dealt with through the divorce that, you know, it hurt my relationship with my daughter for a while, you know, and it led to like alcohol and substance abuse, you know, and it just went down a path that I couldn't come back out of.
Right.
And they know what they're doing, and they helped carve that path and make it so that it was so steep I couldn't climb out if I tried. I just had to wait and wait.
And then they stand and point at you like you're the asshole. Yeah.
And once alimony disappeared, I was able to finally start getting back on my feet a little bit because that's $1,000 I was paying, and it was expensive, you know. And just because I lost my ex-wife doesn't mean my bills here changed at the house. I still had car payments. I still had stuff around the house that had to be taken care of, and it sucked. It put me in a bad spot mentally. And I know I've had quite a few guys that I've served with and friends of mine, close friends of mine that when put in the same situation, they gave in to their inner demons, you know, and I hate hearing about men that get put in situations that they feel like they can't get out of. Cause that's exactly what I felt. I felt like there's no coming out of this, you know, I'm going to be this piece of shit forever now. And, it was hard just to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. I feel that. I have felt that, and it affects me to today. It still affects on every day of my life since it's happened. And it's obviously gotten a lot better, and I've learned to cope with it. But I've met so many other men who have just been screwed over in this situation. And it's not to say that they were all good men or they all deserved it. I mean, that's the hard part, though, is that the kid doesn't care. As long as you're not abusive to the kid,
right?
The kid needs you. They only have one dad and one mom. And like that's the part that pissed me off the most was it was just like they were the ones that suffered for it. My daughter's almost 20. She's here right now. We were talking about it last night. She was just kind of going into some things that really hurt her and really affected her when she was young. And I'm like, man, fuck. I mean, I kind of knew, but to hear her say it now when she's 20 years old and how much it affects her life today. Like, fuck, dude. You would hope that the court was about justice for the kid and the court was about trying to make a good situation for everybody. You know, it's not beneficial the kid to bury the father, even if the father's not going to be the primary caretaker. It's not useful to bury the father and make him a fraction of who he can be or what kind of father he can be.
Well, exactly. Especially seeing, you know, families going from the mother father household to that now the dad gets to see the child 2 days a month. I mean,
yeah.
Which where is does that enough. Help the child? That doesn't help the child whatsoever. No. And now that dad's got to pay all this extra alimony, child support and all this stuff when I'm sure he would much rather be there. But now yeah. they're going to look at, oh, well, the mother deserves a weekend. Well, the father can have every other weekend. Why can't – it's so hard to get that 50-50 custody. Well, luckily, yeah. That's one thing I was blessed. I was able to get 50-50 custody. And that's a hard accomplishment down here in Florida, at least.
It is in most states, for sure. Yeah. And good for you, man. Good for you
being able to – Don't get divorced in another state, though, to find out. Just be done. It's fine.
Well, it's just crazy how two people who love each other at one point more than anyone else can be so fucking evil when shit yeah. goes south. I mean, that's sometimes shit evil. Isn't meant to be forever. It's just the way that it works, and it sucks. I wish my marriage would have lasted forever, but it didn't for several reasons, and there's no point in pointing blame at anybody. The point is that it just didn't work. But there's no reason to damage me or her or the kids for the rest of our lives over that not working out. And oftentimes that's the way that it happens.
Yeah. One thing I'm learning, I mean, now that I'm close to 8 years out, I mean, the first few years they're just really rough for me. I hated everyone. I hated her. I hated my life. I hated my friends. I hated everybody. But as yeah. I'm getting out from it, I've learned, you know, yeah, we didn't work out, but I'm glad I at least experienced it because now I've got all this life skills, not skills, but like experience, you know, with all this stuff that I didn't want the experience on, but I got it, you know, and now I know for future experiences, you know, okay, I'm looking for this. I'm not looking for this. I can tolerate that. Right. I won't tolerate this, but you know, that's the one thing I can say. I did learn quite a bit, which is always helpful.
Plus, you're a different person in your 30s, even if you still got your legs and stuff, than you were in your
20s. Right.
Like, even if 20 didn't suck so bad. Like, the,
I wish I could go back to 20-year-old and slap his ass, though, a couple times, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny how I try to talk to my daughter about that a lot, where she's 20 years old, and she's now an adult, and she knows that there's things she needs to learn and ways she needs to grow as a person to really even consider herself an adult. But it's like you just can't teach wisdom, you know. So if you could go back to 20 with the wisdom you have today, imagine how different life would be. I mean, and it's like trying to share that wisdom or instill that in someone else is nearly impossible. It's such a wild thing.
No, absolutely.
I like how my life's turned out, though. I wouldn't change much. But I like my kids. I like where I'm at now. It works now for sure. Speaking of making things work, this dude logged at least an acre of his own land from wheelchair, cutting it, stacking it. It was insane.
Now you're just showing off, bro.
I'm over here like, yo, is that what two hands can do? Because I'm sad about it.
Yeah, I had one of those track chairs, some action track chairs with them tank wheels.
Yeah.
And, I went out back one day, and my chair was actually being stored at Tyler's house while my house was being built. But I would go to his house, get in my chair, run down, and it all started with a machete and just built up anger. I went out and I macheted down like three trees, and then I upgraded to a hatchet, and it cleared everything.
And it was wooded. It was thickly wooded. It's not like eight trees for an acre, like. No, he cut down hundreds.
We had a frisbee go 8 feet into the woods, and it was there for like a year until I got to it clearing wise.
Thick.
Yeah, I would cut the tree down and drop it. Like when I got my chainsaw, especially, I'd drop it, hook it to the wheelchair, and then pull it out of the woods. Then I would cut it up, stack the wood on the wheelchair, climb the wood, sit in the chair, and then go dump it.
You can't, crazy. You can't admit
a bunch.
You can't admit that you used the chainsaw, bro. Shh.
I got more kills, more tree kills with the machete than I do anything else.
Well, because the area behind our properties is wetlands. You're not allowed to use anything with a motor to clear or cut things down. So it's just, no, not like a real chainsaw. More like a I did it myself kind of thing. I did this, and it was going vroom, 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 vroom. Yeah, that's what it was. No motor.
You know how terrible it makes me feel to have all of my limbs and know that while you were out cutting trees, I was playing video games and masturbating?
Well, don't worry. I wasn't doing it with any skill. I had like 3 trees fall on me. I had one pin my ass to a wheelchair. I couldn't get it off. So
yeah, you,
I had no skill going into it.
I forgot about that. You almost died. You had to almost 27 hours or 127 hours something else off, didn't you?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he got pinned down where no one could hear him in his own backyard by a fucking fallen tree.
No way.
Real
talk. Yeah, I was cutting it down that. And so it was right before a storm. I had to drop a couple trees so they wouldn't fall in the direction of the house and cause any damage. And well, I'm out cutting it, and gust of wind came in, tree fell the opposite direction, and that track chair, as much as you want to move it fast, it's real nice and slow.
So
and
slow.
So I'm trying to move, and it's like just whoosh.
Holy shit. So how did you get out of that? What happened?
After like 10 minutes of, help, my nephew, he heard me, and I was able to get my ex-wife and him to come in, and they were able to lift it just enough for me to get out of it, and then I went and got in a different chair.
Wiggle, wiggle, wiggle.
Damn. That's wild, dude.
Oh, no, wild? No, you want to hear wild, Zachary?
Tell him about the boat. Tell him what happened in the boat the one time.
Yeah, about getting stranded at sea.
Tell him. Stranded. Go.
So I'll tell you the whole story, because why not? I was drunk. I was beyond drunk. I shouldn't have been on the water. And,
back during the addicted days. He's not doing that anymore, folks. Yeah. He's not doing that anymore. He's clean.
Back then. And a buddy and I, we decided we're going to take my boat out about 2 miles offshore and do a little bit of fishing, you know, while we still had some light. Well, my dumb ass had never swam that far in the ocean. It had only been on the beach. So I jump off my boat. And I'm like, okay, hey, I'm sitting here swimming, not thinking anything of it. I turn around and my buddy jumps off the boat. I'm like, oh, shit, not good. So we're trying to swim back to the boat and couldn't catch it. So the boat went in and me and my buddy got pulled out. We got pulled out like 9 miles. And,
what?
Yeah, we got picked up. It was dark out. so like, I had my phone on my wrist because I had a waterproof phone, and I had it there just in case we caught a fish. I wanted to put it in the water, try to get an angle because I left my GoPro. Well, I get in the water, and I didn't have it in waterproof mode, so my phone is like getting on the internet, texting people, playing games, taking pictures, making phone calls.
Oh, no.
I'm trying to call 911, and so finally I get a phone call in to 911, and I'm telling this lady, like, you know, I'm getting pulled out. If you guys don't hurry, we're going to die. I mean, it's getting dark. Well, I think they said at like 15 seconds, they can pull your GPS or something like that. I don't remember exactly how long, but they said I was less than half a second away from them pulling my GPS and my phone hung up. So they didn't know where I was. Fuck. I told the lady, like, I just floated past the 2 mile marker. I can barely see the lighthouse from, you know, my point of view on the water, and yeah, phone hung up. And so we're sitting there about an hour and a half go by, and we see, like search and rescue come out the inlet where we had came out from. And so we're like, all right, cool. We're saved. But they never came far enough. They stayed about half a mile off, and they did a couple passes and they went back in, and that was
no
it.
No way. Like,
what the hell? Well, I've come to find out that at the same time I got pulled off of, well, got pulled off, I got off of my boat, 2 kids thought that they could swim across the channel, and one got sucked down and drowned. The other one got pulled out the quarter mile. So they found those guys, and they're like, well, that's the call. I mean, that had to have been
Whoa.
It. Yeah. So we're sitting out there, and we're getting bumped into by sharks the whole time.
Oh, my God.
absolutely terrifying. And the sun goes down, and my buddy and I didn't want to get eaten by a shark, and I wasn't going to watch him get eaten by a shark either. So we both just made this agreement, you know, the next big wave that comes, we're going to hold hands and go down to the bottom and just, you know, stay there. And so we can see that, you know, got a couple big waves coming, and I hug him real quick, and I'm like, dude, I'm so sorry. And right before this wave that we were going to go down on, we got lifted up, and we see a spotlight about a mile or two away. And so we just start screaming and going nuts. And about another 30 or so minutes later is when a helicopter was flying. They saw us, sent the boat over to us. And then the funny part is, so they get over to us, and I tell the captain, like, hey, go get my buddy. He needs you. I'm good right this minute. So they pull up to my buddy, and I just float on my back. And I'm just thinking, God, I'm saved. Thank you so much. Well, the captain sees that I don't have legs, and there's sharks circling. So he just, without hesitation, abandons ship, and he goes over to me. He's still got his radio and his phone, his gun, everything on him, comes over, pushes me to the boat, and we get picked up and put in the boat. I'm over here literally making out with this fucking boat, ready to have sex with it. It's the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen in my life. These guys are over here freaking out, trying to figure out where the bleed, like, why am I not bleeding? Where's the wound? Yeah. And I'm just over here, stop it, guys, I'm good, you know?
This is what I looked like before, I swear.
The one officer's face, he's just looking like, what the hell is this? You know, and I looked, I'm like, oh yeah, this, I already looked this way, you're good. And then, yeah, we went in, and yeah, we were able to have my buddy's mom come and get us, and helped load up our boat and went home. And I was like that. I felt like I was rocking for about 2 days afterwards. I was so sick. I couldn't move. And it was bad.
Fuck, dude.
How long were you out there again?
Like 8 or 9 hours. It was bad. We really did not think we were coming home that day. And I thought, of all the dumb shit I've done in my life, the places I've been, this is it. I mean, I wanted to swim in the fucking water. I mean, I damn near drowned in my bathtub, but this is it.
You're mostly lungs, so I mean, floating is a thing. But
well, I found out after I got injured, I wanted to learn how to scuba dive, and I almost drowned in 6 inches of water, and the lady's like, your butt cheeks float. I said, what did you just tell me? She's like, your butt cheeks, they float. So sit like you're in the wheelchair in the water, and you'll bob. And that's what I do. And I just kind of bob up and down. I'm like, okay. And I do this motion so I don't fall forwards and drown.
I mean, everyone's butt cheeks float, or just yours in particular?
So now that we don't have the lower legs, it's just butt cheeks float. That or mine are just really big. I mean,
that's incredible.
It's different. Swimming is very different. To go underwater, I have to exhale a little. It's like ballast tanks in a submarine.
Like, yeah, you got right like, up.
Yeah, because if I get underwater, I'm gonna doing back up. But yeah, if I gotta like, it's and like to actually get underwater for any amount of time. But the first time I jumped in water, I was a very good swimmer back when I was an entire man. And I remember how cocky I was when I went in the water at the pool at the therapy thing up in Bethesda, and I immediately jumped in and ass over tea kettle. My butt floated, my head sank. And I was just like, oh, I'll get this. And my legs are cooking. And the dude, the gunnery sergeant who was helping us was like, we'll give him a minute to figure it out. And then finally, like,
yeah. When I was learning scuba diving, we'd be down under the water. And yeah, I would start out going like this, and then I'd just come up. And I'm just like, fuck, I don't know what to do.
Badoing, badoing.
But I didn't know how to swim with legs, so I was horrible. Never been in a pool deeper than my waist before I joined the military.
Wow.
God, being from a landlocked state has to suck.
Yes, it did.
Well, they make swimming pools in landlocked states, just so you know.
Yeah, but nobody makes them deep. That shit was like 4 foot deep.
They're above ground and come up to you right now.
Yeah, well, Indiana, that shit freezes over, so not very, very many people had pools up there.
Mm-hmm. Killing.
I guess I got lucky. I had a boss. I had swam a lot when I was young. I think we had like a city pool or something that was had a 10-foot deep part where you could swim. But I had a boss where I was the office manager for a computer repair shop, and he was a scuba instructor. So he's like, "You want to go to the scuba school and learn to dive?" I'm like, "Yeah, I do." That shit's pretty cool, man.
A little bit.
Oh yeah, diving is cool.
Yeah, it's real cool. You know, and so you've had your limbs blown off and you've almost drowned and you've been eaten by sharks. I feel like the only thing you haven't done is jump out of a plane and your parachute didn't open, but you survived somehow.
So I was supposed to jump out of a helicopter in October. And I get there, I'm all pumped and ready to go, and I wake up that morning, I'm just like, maybe not. I'm gonna listen to my gut on this one, because yeah, that would be my luck, you know, that or I'd slip out in the harness and kerplat.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to tell if you're the most unlucky or the luckiest. I don't know which.
Yeah, I mean, I've done more dumb shit too. We haven't even really scratched the top of the list. I was gonna say,
it's like when we were talking about my luck. It's we got that good bad luck. It's gonna happen, but we'll be all right. Yeah. It's gonna happen.
I walk it
for
off.
Sure. But yeah, we get to walking the off. Yeah. That's a thing.
Holy shit, man. I feel like I went through trauma just hearing your story.
Yeah, fucking. My buddy was telling me I got to make a movie. I'm like, well, then I'd have to make a sequel because I'm not dead yet. I mean,
yeah, give me a few more years.
Yeah, we'll have fucking like Brandon Long Wick 2, you know?
Get it done.
That'd be fun. You got to get a cool ass car, though, if you're going to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, his Jeep is pretty rad.
I do have a pretty
He's
cool
got
Jeep.
A, I got a full custom Wrangler.
I got a Call of Duty Jeep. It's pretty badass.
Do you play a lot of video games?
What's that?
You play video games?
I die on video games.
It was the green highlights on the vehicle that turned him on to that particular Jeep.
Was that a regular? Yeah. Was that a regular pipe?
This is my vape.
Oh, you got like a new weed. You look like Popeye, dude.
Well, since we're allowed to.
Just don't get dumb enough that we can't talk to you anymore.
I feel like you should be like, ah,
yeah, I don't have a big enough forearm for all that shit. Plus, spinach is gross. But, do words and things. Damn it, I had a thought. Ruined it with the pot. Oh, no, the Jeep. So separate from the awesome shit he's done to it, like, because I mean, it came black with like lime green type accents. He added a whole bunch of stuff, but he made his own hand controls.
What?
Yeah. So the VA wouldn't modify it there for a little bit. I was fighting with them because apparently I had a van on file that I didn't have anymore, and they're like, "No, you can only have two." Long story short. Go ahead.
I was going to say the VA only adapts two vehicles every 4 years. So, like, yeah.
Well,
if
you keep those vehicles for like 8 years, you can't get vehicles modified until you pull one of them off your registration. So, if you have two modified vehicles, you can't go buy a third one 4 years later. Dealing with all of that, I bought this thing just on a whim, not knowing if I'd ever be able to get it modified, how I'd do it. And my buddy drove it home. Actually, no, he drove it to Ace Hardware. And I went, bought some PVC pipes and some hose clamps and zip ties and shit and made my own hand controls. And I did more rock climbing and off-roading with those hand controls than I have with the ones I got from the VA.
Wow.
I was like,
that was funny because I would take the doors off of the Jeep and I'd go driving downtown and stuff. And I had this one old lady... I thought I was going to give her a heart attack. She looked over, she's like freaking out, slapping her husband like, "Oh my God." Cause this guy's got no legs driving with a pipe. You know,
that's hilarious, dude.
Yeah. And I don't know what the ticket would be if you got pulled over.
I mean, I am driving with hand controls. They just might not be legal.
I was going to say, I doubt that's legal. Like, I feel like something could happen there, but,
I can't imagine that most cops would even know. There's no way.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't even know. I painted it. I gave it a camo look, so it looked all camouflage and shit to blend the Jeep.
Yeah,
they looked. It looks so professional. Like, I mean, honest, his mechanical mind is fantastic. I can't do that kind of shit.
That's badass.
Yeah, where he could take some shit apart and put it back together or fix all that kind of shit. I'm dumb when it comes to that.
Shit, I built a zip line in the backyard not knowing what I was doing for the kids.
And no one died.
I had to find a way to get from the ground like 30 feet up in a tree, and I didn't know how. So I just had a little pulley system, and I put a seat on it, and I had my nephew drive that little track chair backwards, and it would lift me up in the tree, and I'd do a little bit of work, and he'd lower me down. No harnesses. I'll figure it out.
If I can't buy it off Amazon or find out how to do it within like 5 minutes, I'm out, dude. I'd have been like, yeah, it'd be cool if I could get up there, but I can't. And then I would go back inside.
And that was back when these shoulders were a little bit more juvenile, because I feel like I'm 60 half the time.
That brings up a valid point. So you – Jesus. Sorry. You use the same kind of Segway chair that I use for the most part, but that is mostly because of your now inability to do a manual chair well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I could still push around in the manual chair, but it's getting worse. With not having anything that grabs my chair for me, getting in and out of my vehicle, I got to lift in and out. And just between that and the pushing motion, and when I got injured, my first wheelchair, I had to build myself. So apparently I had the wheels too far backwards, so it's causing me to reach too far back, which caused the damage. And just as I'm getting older, it's getting worse and worse. And I was telling Ty earlier that I got out of my Jeep the other day and I did something wrong in how I got out. And my right shoulder was just on fire the rest of the night. Hurt to push, hurt to cook dinner, hurt to let the dog out. So,
yeah. Well, that just happens generally when you get older as it is.
Well, now I got a big belly too, like doing sit-ups. Sit-ups is the funniest thing because I don't have legs now to actually lift my torso. So when I sit, it's like, and that's my sit-up. So
yeah,
just headbanging.
Yeah, pretty much just laying there. It don't look too good.
I can do it myself. I don't need your help.
That's crazy. Yeah, I can. I mean, I can only. I can only imagine, you know, the things that change whenever you lose limbs like that, where what you're used to doing, and just the little details of life that probably most people don't think about that fucking piss you off, that you're probably like, God damn it.
Oh, plus, yeah. I mean, go ahead.
No, it's just the little things like the fine print there, like the prosthetics. If you go too tall, your equilibrium will get fucked. It won't even be a full your balance thing, like, because your body's not used to being that tall. So they encourage you to be an inch or two shorter than you were in real life. And then with the wheelchair, your seat and the wheels have a very specific relationship, and they need to be where they need to be so the motion is just this rather than. And he had to do that for at least a year. And yeah, even at 20, it still set his shoulders up for failure, basically. And I'm like,
yeah,
you got your arms, but at the same time, like, you can't still
go out.
you get to feel like me some days.
is there much of a learning curve whenever you get the Segway?
I feel like we picked up on that thing pretty quick.
Well, yeah. I made the guy who brought – so he's the reason I have that chair, Brandon. They contacted him, or he got a hold of whatever it was, but they were bringing a test chair for him and was like, yo, I got broke-ass neighbors. And they were like, well, bring down the broke-ass neighbors. And so we just had a little Hot Wheels powwow. But Zach, the guy who got us the chair is also named Zach. He it was a right-handed chair. And I still crushed it. Like, I was a gymnast in real life. Balance works for me. I'm good with balance. I've always been good with balance. I don't know why. But, because I was holding the right part and, like, managing my weight just right so that I was zooming, I was cutting, I was getting it done. And he was like, oh, I had, like, a whole training spiel. And I was just like, yeah, no, fuck you, I'm good.
Yeah, we don't need that shit.
And then, yeah, he's done so much craziness in his life. He knows how his body works.
Well, we went down to Naples to go get those chairs. And they let me and Ty go take the chairs out and test run them before everybody else got there. And so we figured there's a Publix, what, like a mile and a half away, something like that.
Something like that.
So we're like, let's go. And we were hauling ass. And 15 miles an hour was fast as shit for me. I felt like I was in a race car. Going
we got
down the
videos
sidewalk.
of us just hauling down this thing, not sure if it's going to work, if we're going to end up in that ditch or in traffic, but we were just cooking. And I don't know why I got my phone out. I only got the one hand. But that was funny. So the chair itself is 150, 175 pounds, something like that. It's narrow and can go 12 to 15 miles an hour. And of course, we took the seatbelts off immediately. If it starts flipping, I don't want to be strapped to it.
I'd rather fall.
Yeah, I'd rather buck and go. But the
you can't stay cool and have a seatbelt on in a wheelchair. I'm just saying. Come on.
I mean, you'd have to have a helmet on too.
For real.
Yeah, I'm not wearing a helmet for my normal travel. I don't wear one on a motorcycle. But
you get like a pink bike helmet and a fucking Hans device.
Tassels.
Yeah, some of that bullshit. But so they used to when they first started the charity, they SEGS for Vets. You got to say it real slow. SEGS for Vets.
Yeah, not
because
sex.
It sounds like SEGS for Vets. Yeah.
God, that'd be a fucking cooler organization. Would you rather have a Segway or sex?
They have one. There is one out there. Yeah, for veterans and like just disabled people. They teach you how to be able to like have sex again and positions you can do with your chair and like your disability.
Wow.
And I'm like, sign me up. Do they give me a partner? Yeah.
There's like a party house in Orlando that that hires ladies to blow veterans on Veterans Day too.
Where?
That's fantastic.
In Orlando, 2 hours south, sir. 2 hours south.
Where's my phone?
So SEGS for Vets, SEGS number 4 Vets. They would give everyone the chair at the event. Like with all these hoity-toity, amazing, generous people, and someone shot the fuck off the stage in the chair because they'd present them on a stage at an event with drinking because that's gonna pan out. And then so by the time we played the game, we got it a week early and like trained on it like a motorcycle safety course. They had someone trying to show us how to do it. And then, like, when it's presented to us, we're not going to kill anybody. But, like, with the whole Ty figured it out quick part, they kept trying to show me how to do shit, figure eights, literally, like, motorcycle safety course. And I was like, come here. I brought the dude doing the instructing to the bathroom. And I was like, stand right there. I peed in the urinal without putting the brakes down. So I was just balancing on this hoverboard Segway thing, peeing in this thing without... no spills, no nothing, and he was like, "All right, you're good."
you have a baby's arm for a dick. You probably just laid it in the urinal.
No, I don't like getting things on it, so I don't unroll it all the way. It takes so long to roll it back up, Zachary. No, I'm just kidding. Let's stop talking about it.
And I mean, you were both pretty young when this happened, and I don't know. You know, I'm assuming. Let's just assume you had an average amount of sexual contact before it happened. How did that affect your sex life? How did that affect relationships around your sex life?
So initially, I was genuinely terrified it'd never work again because of how this. We talked about the swelling when you get the blast injury. Your balls just. And I was like, okay. And then I know my first erection was kind of super embarrassing because nothing but medical personnel had touched it for like 5 months. And I don't how the paper thin sheet moved, everything just wham, and someone was like, what is that? And I'm like, I use your imagination. Like I was like, my arm's broken to shit. I can do nothing about this. I can't even put a pillow over it. I can't cross my legs in a manner to put it away. Like it is just hello. Here's Johnny. And I was just like, son of a bitch. So I was excited it still did the thing. And then it took a few more month or so to figure out if it could sneeze still. And then me and
were you,
my
were you like afraid you were gonna come blood or something? Like were you afraid
or
it was
just
gonna
it
be...
wouldn't work ever again and I could just get hard and never come again.
which would be its own brand of hell. But
for sure.
Yeah, to show up to the party but never get to party. And then me and Ashley, my now ex-wife, we started dating before I got into like a big lull of like what could love me and I'm this and and then of course newlyweds, we were doing our thing for a while there. But the effect it ended up having was we had to experiment with what was even possible to do. Like figuring out if we can stand on our nubs, like, and put weight through the nubs or get force going that way. Or like if I can lean against this and make that work, like, and then now you got to find someone who's willing to let you try some shit, like without it being kinky and weird, just like, just right. You stay like that with that, like that. And then hold on, let me try this.
you're like, I'm on page 57 of the Kama Sutra book. And I would really like to carry on with my experimentation.
I just want
to
see if this
that's when you got to have a sex swing above the bed.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
No,
were
man.
Were you with all your fucking your handy little devices and cool shit that you make, you'd probably make a swing that could like swing you forward and fuck for you.
Yeah, get a little
shit,
motor
if
on
I
it.
Had a if I had a ladder big enough to get me up to the ceiling, I would have already mounted something.
<You know? laughs> something with a counterweight that swings like a pendulum that just keeps you in motion.
Even if I'm just fucking a fleshlight on the wall, I'll have figured something out, you know.
Just make it feel as real as it can be. Make it feel as real as it can be.
Hey man, fleshlights are pretty fucking amazing,
dude.
So when I was in Afghanistan, I had a communal one.
It was
on a post. Yeah. they took a post and put it in the ground and had this bitch chained up to it, and it said communal fleshlight, wash when you're done.
Did people actually use it?
I hope not, but I did touch it.
Zach, I guarantee it was used, and I could also put a similar guarantee that it was probably never washed.
It was probably pregnant too.
We had a dude on a long training op or something. He ended up getting cellulitis on his D because he used someone else's thang thang. And I was just like, wow. Y'all are animals.
Hell no.
Dude,
ugh.
I've got a Bluetooth pocket pussy. This thing is fucking amazing. But it even grosses me out, dude. It's fucking disgusting.
Especially when you get done and you look at it and you just think, like, what the hell did I just do?
Right. You think you know what a walk worse. Of shame is? Try walking to the fucking bathroom with your pocket pussy to clean it after you're done.
For me, it's the roll of shame, and that bitch is slow, too.
That's why, see, I use old trusty lefty. I don't, so, because you can't turn off the porn fast enough when you're done. And you think I'm going to go, like, wipe off all this excess stuff or go do this and clean that out. Like, no, I'm going to feel like a grimy bastard the whole time. So like, it's going to sit next to the sink until the morning and I'll clean it then.
I'm with you like 95% of the time, dude. This is like a special occasion when I like
some playing
candles,
with no toys,
throw down some rose petals for myself, you know, charge up the old
warm bath.
Pussy. Yep.
I mean, I've tried different toys.
Whatever the
shit.
Fuck you put in there.
I've tried different stuff, but shit. Juice ain't worth the squeeze.
The last time really I tried to be romantic to myself, I about drowned in a damn bathtub. I won't do this no more.
Even when I date me, I hate me. Oh no.
Fucking slipped place. In the bathtub and there's water everywhere and I couldn't get up. Everything was fucking slippy. It was supposed to be a fun little fucking
I'm just
20 minutes
good,
and it
trying to treat
ended
myself
up being a
nice.
Miserable five.
Sounds like my entire sex life, dude.
Yeah, I mean, that's what ladies got to deal with Zach. So, I mean,
that's right.
It was supposed to be a really awesome 5 minutes, but it was a miserable three.
If I'm lucky.
Oh, no, we've taken a turn. Tell me about the time you fell off a motorcycle at a red light.
Oh, the. The time I thought I was racing. Yeah, my buddy had a crotch rocket, and I thought it would be fun to try to goof off and keep up with a crotch rocket. light changed colors and his car, instead of going through a yellow, they stopped. And I'm like, oh shit. So I turned and fell off that way and the bike went that way and I'm just skidding along the road. I was so pissed.
So deep breath. So again, seeing anything like us rolling by on a trike is already whack-a-doodle. You're just like, am I high on drugs whilst driving? I've never taken a pot before in my life. How is that chunk of human doing that? And he's on a Harley freewheeler with the chrome and the orange. It's very loud and ostentatious. His legs are much shorter than my suit. Yeah, and his legs are half the length of mine, give or take. So, like, he don't have enough to, like, you know, route correct. So, yeah, in the way, he's the reason like I got a seatbelt put on mine. I have like an old bench seatbelt on mine because I'm like, look, if I'm going fast enough, I don't want to be launched off it. I'm just going to hug the gas tank and hope for the best. But I don't want to.
Yeah, there's no hugging.
I don't want
to. And the worst part is when it's to the right. To the right, that's my shortest leg, is my right leg. So, I mean, if I'm going to the left, I have a little bit of a chance of kind of like, I can kind of hold it. But anything to the right, and it's whoop. And then I ended up getting a new bike. I put the same shifter and everything on it, and it exploded about a year ago. So now I ride this bike with the damn jockey shifter. So I got my hand on the handlebars up here, and then I'm down here shifting the whole time. So now I have, if I wasn't secure to the bike before, I sure as fuck ain't now. I'll be taking a regular turn and almost fall off now.
He's one of the few people I definitely know that, like, when it gets harder and more dangerous, it has no effect on if he's going to do it or not. Like, he's just like, oh no, I'm still going to ride. I don't care if I got to stand on my ear and shift with my left nut. Like, he's like, I'm going riding, goddammit. I need the wind in my face.
Well, fuck, dude. After as many things as you've survived at this point, you're probably just like, fuck it, dude. Like,
yeah,
I'm going for it.
I'm still here, so fuck it. Yeah, I'm gonna keep doing stupid shit until one of them finally takes me. But so far, I'm pretty good.
Still fucking here. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, still fucking here.
Even if it leaves you sliding around the concrete like a boat without a rudder.
Oh, man. Fucking last summer, I thought it would be funny to go face first down an inflatable slide into a pool, not thinking that the slide would move out, and I face planted concrete from 6 feet and I broke my teeth and gave myself a concussion, fucking moved my shit. It was bad. I have accident written all over me.
Yeah, he is a warning label just in general. Oh, dude, your left that you've tattooed to hell and back.
Left and right, I've tattooed them both.
His nubs. If he lifts up his pant legs, it's a doodle pad. Yeah.
I got like Fred the Fish from SpongeBob. I've got a goat with a knife in its mouth. I've got the word ADHD. I actually have a butt tattooed on my nub so that when I'm cold and it shakes, I can twerk.
True.
Nice.
Yeah. True. Wiggle, I got a dick tattooed on my other leg.
he can tattoo really well. His legs don't denote that, but because
those were the first few.
That was the scratch pad. But like, he's done some very solid work on cousins, relatives, dear friends,
cousins, friends, anybody that wants one, pretty much.
Who was the skull?
That was my buddy Drew.
Yeah, he just did a skull on Drew, and man, impressive stuff. The shading's clean as shit. I was like, oh wait, that's the same dude that did this bullshit on your leg.
Yeah, Drew has got some of my best tattoo work. I mean, I did a giant raven on his chest, and it's clean. And we're getting ready to go in and do more on that. But yeah, I've been picking up tattooing a little bit. It's fun.
That's nice.
Yeah, until you get drunk as fuck and try to put a damn star on your cheek, blackout fucking drunk, and wake up like, why did I buy this fucking thing?
This was a terrible idea. And then you get crazy, yeah. And you're like, yeah, dear friend of mine, tattooed my whole neck ear to ear.
Yeah. Well, I still like this one. I love this one.
That one came out.
I'm getting ready to go back and have some more done.
I just can't. I can't do. I will never go above the neckline except something. I'm going to do a funny thing behind my right ear. A little guy.
My dad in my ear. I can't go above the neckline. It's a problem.
How I've got this design right here, I'm going to end up doing something else on this side, and I want to get my head done at some point. Yeah, and my armpits. I love tattoos. Like, it's a good pain.
Armpits?
Not on your armpits, bro. Jesus, for the record, Christ. That one is good pain. And you can call me whenever you agree.
Like, I've ran needles over it before. It fucking sucks.
Dude, I think the next time we'll have you on the pod again while you're getting your armpit tattooed, we'll do another 2 hour pod while you're doing that and listen, see how much you love it.
And you can just pretend the beginning like you're wasn't telling chaotic us how it goes.
With a microphone.
Dude, that's fucking wild, man.
Yeah, my goal is to be completely covered at some point.
Yeah, I'd like
once my kid's out of school and everything, and once she hits 18, I don't have to so much worry about doing the face and all that other stuff. Because I knocked out my hands and stuff right away. My arms were completely done. Like, my next is want to get my full chest and my neck be completely covered.
Yeah, I need some work. I want to get a lot of shit. It's just so fucking expensive, and it's not. Even when I have the money, it's hard for me to justify spending it. It sucks.
Oh, absolutely.
I guess get my head. Yeah.
That's why I bought my tattoo kit, because I paid for my first gun. I paid $70 off of Amazon, and it came with colors and a pack of needles. I'm like, let's fucking go.
Let's go.
I'm sure like a good tattoo gun's probably expensive, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, they can get expensive. The last one I just bought was $200.
No, okay.
Yeah, I mean, they get up there. Like, you can spend close to $1,000, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah, it's hard to, I mean, not knowing a single thing about it, it's hard to imagine what the fuck the difference between a $70 and a $1,000 tattoo gun are.
Oh, yeah. And then you got to learn, like, your depths and all that. Like, I have fucked up my tattoos, and my cousin, he was one of my very first guinea pigs. Bless his soul. I fucked up a tattoo pretty bad on him when I was learning, and it looks like shit.
That sucks, dude. The guy that I got my three-quarter sleeve on my right arm, he was a Marine sniper. Real strange guy. Fucking interesting dude. But he worked for Marvel at one point. Like, he's a great artist. And he tattooed himself to practice, but did it with no ink or whatever. So, like, that was, I guess, how he started to get good at it. But he has no visible tattoos. It's the strangest shit, dude. Like, it's always just so strange for me to see someone that's what they do. They do tattoos and have no tattoos. It's fucking wild.
Yeah, I've been tattooed by a couple people that don't have a single thing on them. And it's like, well, how the hell did you get into this business?
Exactly.
I don't know that I would trust someone to do it if they don't know what it feels like.
Yeah, it's true. But I think that was part of the reason why TJ did that, why he did it on himself without ink.
Oh, yeah, with no ink. But yeah, the
like, I want to know what it feels like. And
of the tattoo artists that don't have any tattoos at all, which I'm sure there's only like 9 or, you know, some, I'm sure there's a very small number.
Very
of,
small.
Yeah, but like of those, I feel like he's probably the only one that just needled on himself without ink just so he can tell. Like, I would need to do that before I started stabbing people. Like, I'd need to do it on myself first so I knew how it felt.
Right.
I wouldn't be able to put, like, if I was digging real hard and ruining someone's skin or just tearing up the tattoo, trauma, and didn't realize it, shit, they can just stab me after because, like, well, I'm an asshole.
I have this one piece on my arm. It's pretty much it besides the embarrassing finger tattoo that I have, but the first time I went in, I sat for 4 hours or whatever, and it wasn't a matter of like pain by the end, but it just started, my arm started to shake and it kind of got cold and, you know, like that kind of weird shit happens. And then I just never went back to him to get it colored. So it looks like a fucking coloring book.
Palms were sweaty?
No shading or anything.
Were your knees weak?
Mom's spaghetti. Whatever the fuck it says.
I enjoy the pain from tattoos, though. That's one pain I really look forward to all the time. Like, when I got my neck done, I was expecting that to hurt like a son of a bitch. but it was behind the ears way up here that hurt more than anything. I mean, the Adam's apple, it hurt. Like, all tattoos hurt, but it wasn't anything, you know, more. I mean, I got my ribs done, and shit, part of my ribs hurt 10 times worse than my neck.
Yeah.
Sternum was the worst that I've ever fucked with.
It's not a bad pain. It is kind of a therapeutic pain. I get why people love it. Like, I put my headphones on, I locked in some music that I loved, and I just laid back and closed my eyes, and I enjoyed all of it until the end when he was like, all right, we probably should call it. Like, because, I mean, physically, your body at some point, like, the blood starts rushing to where your body thinks it needs to repair itself. And you're, it just involuntarily, my arm was like cold and shaky, and he's like, we got to stop.
I'm
like,
whoa. Yeah, I mean, without basically training, that you're going to go into shock at some point. Like, if you don't have some sort of background in being in pain for this long, it's going to happen. Just medically, that's not you're a bitch. Like, your body's going to give out on you at some point.
But yeah, that's a lot of fucking pain.
For sure. I agree entirely with my first tattoos I got after I was injured were, felt good's not the right word, but they were, there was a catharsis there because it was intentional pain. It was pain I asked for rather than this pain that had been bestowed upon me. Which that was kind of a spiritual moment, I guess would probably be the best way to put it, where I was just kind of like, all right. And I was getting one for my nephew. So it was just, I mean, it was all around a cool thing, but I remember thinking about that where I was just like, woohoo. Pain I meant to happen on purpose.
Can you imagine?
The only thing that sucks is when I'm doing a tattoo on my leg, and then all of a sudden my feet are like, "What the fuck is going on?" But I'm like, "You don't exist. Why are you going nuts?"
Phantom pain is a crazy concept. Such a crazy concept for someone that obviously has never experienced such a thing.
It ain't.
People ask about it all the time.
There's things about it that are whatever. Because, like, right now, because we're talking about it, I can feel my hand. But, like, it's not negative. It's not, ouch, I can feel it, though. Like, if it was really asleep, past the tingly part. And it's getting worse because I'm talking about it. but then every once in a while, I call it lighthousing, which doesn't roll off the tongue very well. But just the concept of womp, womp. And that would happen. That happens all night sometimes when, like, whatever the nerve ball in my left leg that sends shocks to my heel is going to, or my mid shin is going to just go off all night like a damn fire alarm. And guess what?
Brutal.
I'm not sleeping that night. Like, I can't get high enough. I can't get massaged enough. I can't beat the damn nerve ball into submission. Like, those nights fucking suck.
Dude,
I have to give up on trying to sleep.
I have quite a strange relationship with pot. Like, I love it. I didn't start smoking until I was way into my 30s because I was a super drug Nazi kind of fucking idiot that bought into the Say No to Drugs campaign that Nancy Reagan put out in the 90s, 80s, whatever. So I came to the conclusion I was wrong, and then I smoked a lot and really enjoyed it. But I'm also really sensitive to it. I've been to the hospital for it twice because I freaked out and thought I was dying. So like, I can hit a joint in one time, take a sip, and I might have a fucking great time or a horrible time, and I don't know. But the point I wanted to get to and ask you both about, since you're both smoke, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. People that are like, oh, I use it for pain and so on and so forth. Every time I've ever been in pain and I got high, all I could do was focus on the pain. Like, it worked the exact opposite for me. Is it like that for you?
No. Oh, you want to go alphabetical?
I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about.
No, I'm just saying.
I guess it works for you.
No, I was laughing. No, I was laughing. Brandon versus Tyler, if you wanted to talk first. No, so with me, it came down to figuring out what method worked best, because any smoking was a fucking problem. I couldn't smoke flower. Because my lungs would literally just be on fire, and then I'd spend the whole time high just focusing on that, like, won't of my freaking lungs just burning. Yeah. And then I tried the volcano vaporizer thing, and that still ended up being too harsh. I ended up finding edibles, and then you end up finding the right strain or whatever that'll work. But for me, edibles and this has never done it like edibles. This helps. But edibles turns off the nerve shit where my feet are for real gone and I for real end right here now.
And it just a warm glowing light like at the end of the Grinch is kind of what I akin it to when it works right.
There's other times when I, you know, the pain's just like, guess what? And I'll fight you through that shit. And then, you know, if you're high enough that you're going to turn the pain into something else anyway. So it's mostly hit, but there are some misses where I'm just like, oh, great. Like, and then, yeah, indica versus, you know, and all the other different things you figure out along the way. But it's helped me far more than it's ever hindered me.
I have to agree 100%. I mean, when my legs are hurting, I'll go out in the garage and smoke real quick. Or if I can't sleep, I use it mostly to shut my brain off more than anything. Because there's still quite a few times I'll smoke and the pain will still be there. There's just nothing I can do about it. But yeah, I use it more for like shutting my brain off. If I need to go to sleep, I can get really fucking baked real quick and go pass out.
Wow.
It helps if I have to sleep in a strange place if I'm on a road trip or something. For Thanksgiving, I was sleeping on my mother's couch because I was the only adult that didn't have a partner there. I had to get a little too far gone almost at when everyone went to bed so I could actually pass out and get some sleep.
Like anxieties too.
I was going to say, that's a good note. This is great for that, for the shutting my brain down to a degree where I will either something I was stressing about, I either won't give a flying fuck about anymore, or I will chill out enough that I can handle it. And then the same thing with the pain. If it's going to bark and bite all night anyways, I'd at least like my head to be in a better place about it. So I'll take a few good rips and freaking at least not care as much that it's sucking. And like I was like, any edge I can take off it sounds great to me. Like any edge,
I think you zone out on something else a little easier.
Put on
it's
something.
Pretty, it's pretty crazy how things can affect people so differently. I mean, I can eat a peanut butter jelly sandwich, and another motherfucker dies with ate a peanut. It's like this. Everything's sort of the same way. You know, you smoke. Everything you guys said weed does for you does the opposite for me. It makes my brain go ramp up, and it makes me overthink everything, and then I. As far as like anxiety, I get super anxious, and if I'm in pain, all I do is focus on that pain. Like it's,
I gotta have a good strand though, because sativas cause anxiety. Me personally, I don't fuck with sativas anymore. I have a medical card, but it's too strong. So I mess with hybrids or indicas. Those are the two I mess with.
I generally stay with indicas, but
I've even read there's a website where you can go in and look at each individual strain and they break it down on the levels of paranoia that come from it and so on and so forth. And even with indicas, you can get some of that shit.
Lance will help you find the one that could work for you, bro.
Yeah.
Lance knows all that shit.
Dude, that's the thing is when it's a good high, I fucking love being high. More than drinking, more than anything else.
Well, one thing that I ended up, I found mushrooms a couple of years back, and that has cut down my weed smoking because it has helped exponentially. It's even helped me with my pain because now, before that little bit of pain would drive me batshit nuts and like it would ruin my night. And through the experiences that I've had now, I'm better able to handle and manage my pain. My anxieties and all that stuff I smoked for are gone, or I can handle them now.
Are you microdosing? Or are you talking about?
I do micro doses, and I've done a couple macro doses.
Okay.
I'm gonna take all these, and I'll call you in the morning.
I'm super for psychedelics. I absolutely think that they can squash people's ego and change people's lives and for the better.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, like there's places where they're now doing research on. Of course, like MDMA and ketamine and other things, but even psilocybin as to how it affects depression and things like that. And it's doing amazing things.
But yeah, they're doing a bunch of research for veterans as far as how it helps with their PTSD and their brain injuries and stuff. And then that's what I started looking into when I got into it. And
yeah,
it's just been nothing but positive and it's all beneficial. I mean, you might have a bad trip, but that trip is a lesson, and you learn something from it that you take away with you. And it's because of a macro dose that I did once that I don't drink anymore. I don't party like I used to, and kind of got my head out of my ass and turned my life around. And I solely credit a macro dose because nothing else would have done it for me. It humbled the shit out of me.
Yeah, dude, I've heard so many stories. It was like growing up, like I said, I was pretty anti-drugs. I bought into the school shit, and I was a, you know, try to be a superhero, good guy kind of thing. And it was honestly Joe Rogan, listening to him for the last decade plus of him, the way that he was kind of the same way. He was very anti-drug and then realized he was wrong. And now he's had so many, you know, scholars and professors and brilliant minds, some of the most brilliant people on the earth, who have all done heroic doses of psilocybin at some point and said that it changed their life.
Yeah, he was like my, you know, my inspiration to want to do it. You know, I had been scared, like, well, what if I do this and it takes me back to that day, you know, or what if I freak out because now I don't have legs, or I don't know what's going to happen. But it wasn't until I finally did it that I realized, like, this helped me so much, even on a macro dose or a micro dose scale. I mean, I can microdose, and like these voices and all this stuff that I'm just battling, these demons, they shut up and go away for a while. And then I'm able to move forward in life versus backwards or staying in the same crappy spot that I'm in. They just, I think they need to do more research on it and quit criminalizing it. You know,
it's insane.
A couple states you can now do it legally, but I mean, what are you going to do? You're just going to sit there and look at a tree for 4 hours. I mean, you're really not going to do anything. I mean, you might panic, but I mean, I truly think each high is, like I said, a very valuable lesson.
You could do the exact same thing you do with people that drink too much and go in public. You put them in jail. I mean, it's crazy how alcohol is legal. People get fucked up. People hurt each other. People die. It's a horrific drug, but because it's legal, everybody kind of accepts it, and you talk about mushrooms and you're a crazy person, and it's a fucking thing that grows in the ground, for God's sakes.
Yeah, natural. It's insane.
Yeah, it's bananas that we're even having these conversations still at this point.
Yeah, alcohol ruined my life. It's ruined so many other people that I know's lives, you know, but it's perfectly acceptable out in town. Yep. I mean, you can be drunk out in public, no one bats an eye. But if someone knows, like, oh, that guy's high as shit on mushrooms, all of a sudden, you know, like, you're a bad person. But really, in reality, that guy on mushrooms is going to have a beneficial experience, or that guy's just going to, you know, do whatever he wants to do and make an ass of himself.
Clearly, you probably shouldn't do a heroic dose and then go to Publix. I mean,
it's not recommended, you know.
Probably not the move, but... you know, if it happens and somebody's acting out of sorts, you put them in the clink for the night or whatever. I mean, it's not the end of the world. It's not a reason to make it illegal for everyone around the whole fucking country. It's insane. Yeah,
I think the only reason it was made illegal is because they knew it had medicinal benefits to it.
Of course. Well, not only that,
it'll help people
not
need all these other medications.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only that, but they don't want free thinking people. They don't want people that are aware. They want dumb fucks that follow shit and fight with each other over who's, you know, idiot political party is best. Like, they just
go
want
with the
you
matrix.
Go to work hard, make somebody else a bunch of money who's richer than you, and fuck off. Like, we don't want you to think. Oh well, man. What are you gonna do?
Well,
you just
man.
Make it work in your own life, like. I don't think that, you know, the war on drugs has been such a joke. It's not like it's ever stopped anyone from doing drugs they wanted to do.
Yeah. No, I remember the, what was it, SAFE class that they used to have in school. They're like, oh, this is what cocaine looks like. Don't do
ours
that.
Ours is called DARE.
Yeah.
DARE. That's what it was. Not SAFE.
Yeah.
What am I thinking?
Drug awareness, resistance, education. You want to hear
Shit,
a really
that just
awesome
made me want to do it.
Yeah, I know. You want to hear a really glorious story? My DARE officer from elementary school DARE shit, in like when we were in middle or high school, we got word that he got arrested for running a inter-precinct drug ring.
Oh, shit.
I was like, bro.
What better way to hide than in plain sight, dude, you know?
Like, damn, bro. You were teaching us how to really do it?
I would have so paid more attention. It's just the things they don't think about that are so ignorant is, number one, like teaching. I know that for me to have learned, and the way they teach you that pot and heroin and coke and all these things are equally bad for you. They're equally terrible. They're equally whatever. When they're all significantly different in how they affect you, how addictive they are, how dangerous they are, how harmful they potentially are, et cetera, et cetera. And in the long run, the people that suffer the most is most of the deaths happening from like heroin and things like that are from impure product, not because people do too much, but because they unintentionally don't know what they're putting in their body.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they do too much, but I totally thought you were about to put pot, coke, and heroin in the same category or something. And I was like, no. Bro, I agree with you on so much, but
no, where I think that's a problem is that if you teach me that heroin sucks. And you teach people that heroin, you know, I was smarter than this, but not everyone is like, teach people that heroin, pot, coke, and everything is all the same bad. And then
if you take where pot, you're going
pot
to
is
take
accessible.
Heroin.
No, I don't mean that. I mean pot is obviously more accessible. So somebody goes and smokes pot for the first time and they're like, you know, this isn't actually that bad. Fucking DARE officer's full of shit. Well, now they're going,
think
well,
coke
maybe
and heroin's not that bad.
Exactly, dude. Yeah. Exactly. Where you just,
coke
you're just,
is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's fucking I've tried fantastic.
Shrooms. I got shrooms.
I was gonna say I love it.
No. Coke's great. You're not allowed to love it. You're off it, bro. You're off
well,
it now.
I mean,
you can't,
I don't do
you
it no more. But
you can't admit
I can
you
still
love
have
it.
A love.
No, you can't. It is unrequited. She don't love you back. But
no,
so my half a neighbor got me shrooms, and I gave that a whirl. And I agree entirely. Y'all were on your thing. I wasn't gonna interrupt. But I've only done one bigger dose, not huge, but big for me, where I was sitting out in the rain, and instead of getting wet, I was feeling the rain and just like enjoying watching everything get wet. And then I fucking froze to death and had to go take a hot shower for a while, too. But when I was done with that, it did feel like something wrung my brain out, like anything that was in there that didn't need to be in there or anything that was bogging down any of the processes or any of that stuff. Got wrung out somehow, and I just felt like my brain relaxed, if that makes sense. And then
yeah,
I
microdosed quite a bit.
I can't micro. So, I tried a little bit. What were the milligrammages on the things that the other things?
Those are half a gram, so it's microdosed.
So I took two of those, and I felt like I needed to take like four maybe or something, but cause
yeah,
like I was
you
like,
had a good high going, which yeah, you weren't seeing anything.
It wasn't where I wanted to be. I needed to be a little psychedelic-y, or it feels like my tummy, it just ends up feeling weird rather than anything good. I just
the
feel
one
like
I'm getting ready to
sick.
Do. I'm getting ready to do ayahuasca down in Orlando.
Oh, holy shit. At that
yeah,
retreat.
I got a buddy. Yeah, at that retreat, my buddy, he lives in Alabama, went out there. Him and his wife did it. And he's a combat veteran, Green Beret. And he said it was absolutely life-changing for him.
Yeah.
And he saw beauty and stuff that he never thought he could. And he just said it helped him out. And that's going to be my next step. I've done stuff similar, and I've had some serious experiences. But I think
I'm
ready
to take. Have you ever done straight DMT?
So that is what I'm actually getting ready to do before I go off to ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Again, I got a connection that's going to help out. But that way I have that ride first. But I've done
– right.
I made the mistake and I did a shit ton of acid. I was stupid, drunk, didn't know what I was doing. And I did 11 hits and I
– holy fuck, dude.
Yeah.
I did a half – it's the only psychedelic other than microdosing mushrooms. I've done a half a tab of acid and it was a lot. I can't imagine 11. That's insane.
This was the craziest experience I've ever had in my life. I mean, it was almost 38 hours of just losing my mind.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought for sure I wasn't going to come back. And like, I kept going in and out of like my consciousness. And then I'm in like the Mayan forest and there's these Indians running around chasing me and shit. And then I'd come back and then I'd go into a different experience. And like, I just kept going into shit for hours and hours. And it was nuts. I remember
you were just at home for this whole thing.
Yeah, I was in my garage when I was drinking, and one thing led to another. A buddy came by, and then he took off, and I had all this in my system and all by myself. And I laid on the floor, played some Pink Floyd, and the first like 5 hours was amazing, and yeah. Then it wasn't. And the like 33
and then
hours
it really
that followed.
Wasn't.
Yeah, the 33 hours that followed was miserable.
It really, really, really wasn't.
I
remember
fucking...
I looked into the mirror and I looked into my eyeballs, and I have one of these mirrors that you can put on the counter so you can really see. And like, I saw the electronic synapses going on in my brain, and I was able to dig through it like a filing cabinet and pick out memories, stuff I didn't remember that I had. And I was going back to my childhood.
You made it up, bro.
I got to see the future in a sense.
Holy shit.
You made up the childhood memories like you made up the future shit. Your brain was right. Like, guess what? You're going to tell people you remember this thing from when you were 3 for the rest of your life. And guess what? It didn't happen.
I've met so many people that you know, like me, just totally bought into that only boneheads do drugs and that every drug is created equal and they're all terrible and you're a bad person and they're bad for you and scary and all these things. I've met so many people like that. And I'm like, what if, you know, psychedelics, psilocybin, LSD, DMT, ayahuasca, which is obviously also DMT. What if that's one of the most important and best experiences you can have in this life?
I think it's something everybody should at least ayahuasca is something everyone should experience. Granted, I haven't done it personally. My buddy, he has, and just his stories, and I've been working my way up to it. I just think everybody should experience some sort of a macro dose just to see, you know, the benefits that come out. Yeah,
because
I've had scary, you know, experiences, but through those scary experiences, I've grown. You know, I've been able to see my flaws or see where, you know, I can improve in this area or whatnot.
And yeah.
I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't because of these experiences. And I didn't touch any of this stuff until I was like 27. I just smoked. And finally, one day I just said, all right, fuck it. Let's try this. And after I came to, you know, back to a level head, I could feel the weight off of my shoulders. And I think veterans that are dealing with like PTSD and trauma like that, they need to be doing these kind of hallucinogens. It's not a just go sit and trip and look like a dumbass for 6 hours. No, it's go and have actual help done. You go, because with ayahuasca, you're able to do, I mean, like, you know, 10, 12 years of mental therapy in one session. I mean, why wouldn't you? Yes, it's a lot to take in, but
why not?
That's one time.
Every stone unturned. Like, if that's the last stone, like, you're going to give up.
But
why
has it got to be the last stone, too?
No, I'm
you
just
know?
Saying,
like, I don't understand. No, I get what you're saying.
Everyone's mentality towards it ends up either being, that'll be embarrassing or that'll be scary or I definitely don't even want to face that. And the main fucking problem is that third one.
Yeah.
You need to face it. That's the fucking problem. It has a mean face to you right now, so it fucking haunts you. So if you go do this trip, this journey, you might be able to unmask that bitch and realize that it's a Scooby-Doo situation and you're not scared anymore. And then
I think the stereotype
that ruined everything is gone.
I think the stereotypes that like mushrooms and cocaine and all that have, we should also be looking that way towards prescriptions because we don't know what's in this shit. And they just hand 100%. It out like, oh, you're upset, take this. Oh, well, that's not working, take this. Well, that causes 50 side effects. You know, that could be way worse. Or...
Yep.
You eat this mushroom and you might get a little anxiety. You might shit. You might throw up. But are you going to die? No. Is it going to go away? Absolutely. You know, are you going to have lifelong side effects that are negative? Are you going to get cancer? Absolutely not. You know, there's no experimenting.
You can't grow oxys and fucking Adderall in your backyard, so therefore they make that legal because there's money changing hands. While if you have mushrooms, you could just fucking grow them, and they don't like that.
Yeah, the same thing. They don't like it at all. That's why I want cattle and everything because free medicine, you know, and it's that easy. It grows under cow shit. I mean,
well, if you've listened to Rogan, I'm sure you've heard the whole stoned ape theory and like the whole idea that we evolved from apes through mushrooms and that them finding mushrooms under cow shit led to human beings, and they doubled their brains.
Yeah, it pretty much gave them their conscience and all that. It right. made them smart enough to be able to make tools and evolve.
Yeah.
At least think outside the box enough to figure shit out, for sure. Because, I mean, well, you think about Einstein and all them, they were all autistic as hell.
Yeah. Well, and the squashing of the ego, is a common thing that you hear among these people on Rogan. Yeah, for sure, dude. The majority of the population, especially in this country.
Yeah, they need a big slap in the face of like, you know, you think you got it, but you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
I mean, if it's literally just the change of the way you think about anything, like anything that is, like we were talking, like y'all just said, is a big negative in your life. To get rid of it, you have to change the way you think. And if you're going to do the exact same thing you've been doing for 10 years, that will not do anything to change the way you think. So you have to step out of it. You have to try something else. You got to go do the where you lay in a sensory deprivation tank. You do all the – do psychedelics while you do that. Like, do something different to get different. You can't get different results if you're doing the same fucking thing the whole time.
And that's why I even got into hallucinogens. I wanted to see what I could change about myself, because I knew I had a lot of flaws. I knew I was pretty fucked in quite a few ways. So I wanted to see, okay, if I can learn one thing, you know, then it's a benefit. And it was through doing that, again, now I don't drink, I don't party, I got my head out of my ass, you know. It's solely because of hallucinogens.
I think so much of the population still looks at those things as party drugs, and they're not. They don't have to be.
Oh, I wouldn't want to do this around people. Hell no.
No.
I mean, I got like one or two people I'll do it with. Outside of that, like, I want to be left alone. Hi, Zoe.
All right, go away. Let us finish up. She's just standing there like... I'm like, yes, come here for a second. Sorry.
It's just crazy that there's such a stigma attached to all that still. And there's so many people that even listening to this podcast right now are probably like, yeah, fuck that. Like, those guys are just, you know, whatever. They're just crazy and they're partying.
Just a bunch of druggies.
Yeah, it's not that way at all, man. And it's funny because those same people will go to the bar and get drunk three nights a week, or they're taking Adderall every day or Xanax so they can sleep. And those things are just as bad or worse, probably, we're talking about.
No, if you look at the long-term effect, they did a study, and damn it, I'm gonna find it and I'm gonna send y'all the link. But it was long-term effects of booze, pot, and like I think it was heroin. And the pot looked like a normal ass dude. As far as like the lungs and everything, like all of the stuff. But yeah, booze just tears up everything. It's not good for a single part of your system. And your body literally rejects it. And you ultimately get better at drinking it through training. And you're a fucking badass because you can kill a 30 rack and, you know, run
fuck
whatever.
Up your life.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, you're cool, yay, but like, what the fuck? Because I mean, the people who judge pot so harshly are the ones who are quick to go get a beverage for sure. But then, you take one step farther to coke and the other ones, and you're like, okay, yeah, we're definitely getting to a let's not fuck with that any sort of long term, because either financially it's going to fuck you up, or eventually you're going to blow out your sinuses or something, and you know that's when the detriments start fucking coming into play, or lose weight too much fucking weight.
For a minute, it's going to be bad as fuck. I love it.
I did, man. I tried coke once, and it was not for me. And everyone who knows me is like, "Bro, you on coke would be insane because you're already so much." And I'm just like, "Dude, it was a problem." So I only did it because I was so fucking tired. We went on. I drove to Tampa. We went. We did a fishing trip that we left at like 5 a.m. We fished until like 1. And then we get back to the house after chilling and eating and stuff. And I'm like, we're hanging at this house until tomorrow. And they're like, all right, bar time, as soon as the sun starts going down. And I was like, fuck y'all, I'm going to just hide here. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm down here. I'll soldier through. And I was like, sure, I'll try some. And it was awesome for about 30 minutes.
That's a great way to get a little boost of energy, get home, you know?
If it lasted like pot gummies did,
I'd be a cokehead for sure.
I've never enjoyed it sober. It's the perfect pick me up when you're like, if you've been drinking for a while and you're kind of coming down, you feel like shit, you don't really want to get back in the game, but your friends still want to hang out, and you're like, a bump gets you right back in the fucking game. You're like, let's go. I don't do it now. I mean, I have probably in the last couple years once or twice, but
I used to do it before mosh pits, so I had like all the energy in the world to go beat the shit out of people. I did it in a wheelchair. I mean, fuck yeah, I was ready to go.
Yeah, now you got this wheelchair that's doing cocaine.
Yeah, right.
Fucking 15 miles per hour bullshit.
makes little R2-D2 sounds, man.
I don't condone cocaine use. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm for psilocybin use. I'm for psychedelics, ayahuasca, DMT.
The natural things that you didn't have to do something to make it the thing that you're taking. Yeah, you don't gotta play. You don't play with the chemical makeup. You don't treat it with this or these. Do all these things. You don't add anything to it. You can literally pull them out of the ground and go to work already. The line between good and bad, as far as I'm concerned, is when you've had to take all those extra steps to make it the final product.
Yeah.
And because if you're doing all that, it's going to have adverse effects.
Do natural shit, man. It messes with my insides, all this other stuff. You know, I'd rather stick to natural remedies anymore anyways.
But as far as the danger of it, I wouldn't say that it's a ton more dangerous than alcohol. Yet people do that all the time.
No, alcohol is with all these things to me. It's literally in the same category as all that other bullshit. And I don't know why it's as socially acceptable as it is while the other things aren't.
It's crazy.
It's 100% in the same category.
I would say it used to be a little safer than alcohol up until they started dealing with all the fentanyl. Now, I mean, you don't know if you're going to die from a tiny little blow, you know, a little pinch or, you know.
Yeah.
You just don't know anymore. So it's, to me, one of the most unsafe things you can do.
100%. Yeah.
I would love to try.
I used to, really fuck with it, too.
Yeah.
The only way I would fuck with coke again is if someone somehow found or concocted original recipe Coca-Cola.
Okay.
Because the original bottles had 3 grams in them or something. It was insane. And I'm like, I'd like to try it just to say I tried original recipe Coca-Cola. And
that's the only time I ever played. Back in the day, people drinking four sodas a day, just fucking jacked running down the street. Hey, man, you got a quarter? Can I have a quarter, man? Shit.
you drink a bottle of Coke and you're like, I should buy a boat.
No, dude, that's how the Wright brothers figured it out, bro. They had a Coca-Cola and they were like, oh, if we we get flying, we can get off this ground.
You know,
we'll go up there. We'll go up there.
We haven't even mentioned meth in this whole thing. And then to go back to what we're talking about, motherfuckers that just pop Adderall all day don't realize it's literally one molecule away from meth. It is meth. Word.
And they look down on methods too,
dude. Yeah, but my doctor prescribed it. Yeah, no thanks.
A man who went to a lot of schools said I could have this, so I was like, "Well," I was like, "the guy who gave me that was smart too."
Adderall really picks me up. I bet it does. It's fucking.
I was given actual speed once by a doctor, and that shit. Holy hell. He wanted me to take 2 of these pills in the morning to get my day going. And I took those 2, and in 45 minutes, the house was mopped, dishes were done, laundry was clean. I was out cutting the grass. I mean, everything that I could have even thought of was done before noon, and I was just sitting there so jacked. Fuck all
that's
that
crazy.
Stuff. I'd rather have a downer anymore, some weed, good indica, just sit back and relax.
But chill. I don't need to be amped up more.
Yeah, I'll just drink coffee. I need to mellow out. I need things to calm down. That is that's why I need the medicines.
If you think about the way our society's set up, going back to what we were talking about earlier, where they just want to make you a fucking worker. They just want you to be productive. Of course they want you to be on speed and Adderall. They want to pop you with shit that's going to make you go out and do a fucking good job and not ever stop and realize how stupid your life is and how much you hate everything you're doing. Let's get them all fucking hopped up and make them productive and keep them paying for the shit and then pretend like everybody's doing fucking, you know, actual like safe drugs are pieces of shit.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's crazy.
So approaching the 2 hour mark. I wanted to, before we got to the point of signing out, I wanted to make sure we talked about the path you're on now. You were telling me about some pretty exciting stuff that about shit moving to Texas maybe in a year or so. But the excitement on your face when you were telling me about all this was a big deal for me because I was there for a lot of these times that you were in your low lows. And I would love for you to have the floor and talk about the tribe for me.
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, back when I was still drinking, I met with an organization out in Texas. It was Combat Marine Outdoors, and they just take combat vets out hunting. And on my very first hunt, I met with my buddy Brad. He's like a brother now to me. And we kept in touch ever since. So he came up with this idea about a year ago that, well, instead of participating in these organizations, let's start our own. So he has been doing so much to get this organization up and going. He created, it's called Honor Tribe Outdoors. And our goal is to simply take combat veterans, combat disabled veterans, and Gold Star families on hunts. We have 9,000 acres out in Texas, and we got a lodge, and yeah, we try it. This is our first year, and I actually have to get ready to go to Nashville to help for a fundraiser that we got going out there, but we're just trying to get all these veterans, you know, I'm stuttering.
You're good.
These hunting organizations, they fill up pretty quick because we do have a lot of combat veterans that still want to get out there and make a kill. So, and not all of them are strictly for combat veterans either. Some of them are just, if you've got a DD-214, come hunt with us. But we've got this mindset that we want to stick with combat veterans just so that, you know, when we all get there, we've all got the same experience to an extent. Granted, everybody's experience was different, but we all have been in combat. So we all have felt that stress, you know, and, it makes it nice when we're all sitting around the fire at the end of the day of hunting. And if you want to tell your story, you can. If not, you don't have to, but everybody here can somewhat relate to what you've been through, the emotions you felt.
That's amazing.
So go ahead.
I was going to say, that is the beautiful part. That is what every veteran is mostly craving and hungering for, is that, the camaraderie. Because the
sense
second
of community
you get out,
enough times.
Yeah, exactly. The second you get out, it is no longer me and y'all against them. It is me versus that. Wait, who's in my corner? And you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, and you feel alone and like no one gets it and no one's had the same life experiences as you and all this other stuff. And then you realize that everyone else had to fucking scatter to the winds because you're never from the same area as the people that you got the closest with when you served. So whenever you end up getting to do these kinds of things, if it is hunting or fishing ones or any of that kind of stuff, just getting around like-minded motherfuckers again is better medicine than any of the drugs we've been talking about.
Oh, absolutely. Sorry. I mean, I would almost go to say that like it's because of these organizations that I've been able to pull through, you know, with my depression and the stuff that I went through after getting sober, you know, at least from alcohol. It was because of the relationships that I built through these organizations. Like my buddy Brad, if I had never went on that hunt, I would have never met him. And he's a brother of mine. We go and we see each other. You know, he'll come to my house. I'll go out to Texas, or, you know, we get in touch frequently. And that's what we're trying to build back. And we're trying to give to other people. I've been blessed with that opportunity. So now we want to give that opportunity to other people because you never know. This might be what, you know, saves that veteran's life. They might be in a low place because we don't know them. I mean, we just we know that they've been through combat, you know, that they're fucked up just like we are, you know, and most of us don't even want to admit that we're fucked up, but we all know we are. And just to be able to give them that chance. Yeah. Like I said, it could be that one opportunity for them that saves their life. And that's what we want to reach out to as many of them as we can. And we still want to extend this to the families of those members of, that didn't make it home. Like the guys I served with that didn't make it home, they're children are 13 now, along with mine. And it's nice to be able to offer that to like their children and their families and stuff. So like if their brother died, they could still come hunt with us and we'll treat them just like one of the boys, you know, because they've earned that, you know.
Well, and not even just to save their life, but also just to give them quality of life, man.
Exactly.
Like everybody deserves happiness.
And like Tyler was saying, to know that you're not alone anymore. I mean, if we can connect two people and they build a bond that's unbreakable, like mine and Brad's,
boom.
That's what we want, you know, because now I know if I'm ever struggling, I can call him. And if he's struggling, he can call me, you know, and we want that for people. We don't want them to ever feel alone. We tell them, you know, when you leave here, don't feel like you can't text us anymore or call us.
Yeah.
You need someone to talk to. We don't have to be sitting around this fire pit. We can still talk and shoot the shit wherever you are. You need a break, let me know. We'll find a way to get you out here. But we want to just reach out to as many, you know, combat vets as we can.
Well, so I've said this, me and Ty have talked about this quite a bit, like the importance of us doing what we do with this podcast is for individuals, for changing one person. He got a text from a guy the other day that blew my mind. It was amazing. It's just to hear one person say that it's changed them or helped them. And I think for you, it's the same as it is for us. It's therapeutic. It's healing for me. This is healing for me. Being able to help or do something for someone else and turn my what I've been through into something for somebody else is so fucking important.
Absolutely.
I second everything he just said by a lot. Yeah, a cop buddy that I served with, hit me up kind of out of the blue and was just like, dude, there's so much they didn't prepare us for. Even then when we served in the Marines, now that I'm a cop, there's so much stuff that they didn't prepare us for, and your podcast is absolutely helping. And I was floored. I about fell out the chair.
He said one episode does more than 8 or 10 hours or whatever it was of the training they send them through, which is basically nothing. It was great to see, great to hear.
That's awesome.
100%.
I don't know his name, but shout out to that guy, by the way.
Derek Osgood.
Shout out to Derek. we see you, man. You're the reason we do this shit.
So back to y'all. If people want to get involved or if people want to contact to potentially go on hunts and things like that, how would they get a hold of y'all?
So we have a website, honortribeoutdoors.org. You can come and check us out. We got photos and everything. Right now we don't have a link to be able to apply, but I can get you some business cards so that you'll have like a point of email. But it's just send someone an email through the organization and we'll get you out there. We have places on the website if you want to donate. Like right now we're doing, if you donate $100, you get a sweatshirt. So we have little perks for people that want to donate. And yeah, we're just trying to make it so that hopefully here in the near future, we can build another cabin, a bigger lodge that can hold more people. Get all the supplies and stuff that we need and be able to take, you know, we want to do this year round eventually, doing like predator hunts, fishing trips, hunting on the land.
Yeah, like I different categories of hunt as well. And or just bigger, badder, awesomer stuff.
About potentially opening up a fishing chapter here in St. Augustine because, one, you get to tour the oldest city in America, and then two, go out and you don't have to go that far to go catch some good fish. So I think it'd be something that, you know, a good next step for us, you know, on the East Coast instead of in Texas, but.
Yeah.
We're definitely excited to do whatever we can. You know, we just want to get veterans, give them a break and build a community. Cause the way we look at it, you know, we honor our family. And once you join our family, you're our tribe. So, that's honor tribe it. And we keep you tight. Once you're in with us, you're in. That's it.
I love it. Right on. Well, we're at past the 2 hour mark. I think we did a good amount of stuff here. Sure, we'll think of shit that we didn't cover or whatever. And
at the beginning, where I was worried about not getting certain information out, I am very satisfied. I feel like the listeners know all the pertinent information about this dude now.
Yeah, this was a fun one, man. I feel like everyone's been just a little more fun. I'm enjoying this shit so much. It's just a good time. Brandon, I feel like I know you a little bit now. We're friends just from 2 hours of fucking hanging out here. So hopefully we'll see you.
I'm honored to be on your guys' show. You know, I appreciate y'all having me.
Right on, man. Well, everybody, thank you for listening. Please share, like, follow, all that good shit, because it helps us get the word out there to new people. And we got some – I think I was going to talk to you about this. I'm going to say it on the air for the people that are listening. I want to do the Q&A thing soon.
Sure.
We have people live on a video and let them, you know, ask some questions.
That would be awesome.
Straight up comment section.
Right. The app that we're in right now, if you see to the right of your screen, there's that – I don't know if you guys have it, but the whole bar.
Oh, yeah, chat icon at the bottom.
Yeah, there'll be a chat over there where I can invite people in, not as guests, but as viewers, and they can come in and just talk with us. So
that would be epic.
Kind of badass.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. That'd be cool to get the feedback for sure.
Like 50% of the questions are going
to actually come on.
Yeah, but I feel like 50% of the questions are going to be about your dick, just so you know. So whatever, dude.
Refuse to not bring it up. My mother's going to listen to these, you dickhead.
Your mother should be very proud, dude. What the hell?
Shush. Stop it.
All right, man. Well,
let's not even make those kinds of jokes about my mother, please. Thank you. Sorry.
I'm just saying.
Still fucking here.
My mom's proud of the fact that I got a good hog. It's not a bad thing.
Still fucking here.
Still fucking here. We'll see you guys.
I'm going to tell you what my mom thinks.
We'll see you guys later.
All right, bye.